Welcome to the D Word, the UK's only weekly internet radio show that talks dementia, with me, your host, Peter Hill. Welcome along, good to have you company here on the D Word. We all like a good story, but probably don't think how important it can be for people living with dementia. This week, my guest is Martha Pusey, who after a career in social care has set out a doctorate in dementia based on the use of storytelling to give people a voice in their care plans. Martha will be joining me right after this from Alex Amen. Summer Sound from Alex Amen, and Please Don't Tell Me You Love Me, kicking off this week's D Word, where my guest is Martha Pusey. Martha, it's great to welcome you as my guest here on the D Word. Lot of time in social care that you spent, and you're now doing your professional doctorate. I mean, what dragged you into the kind of the world of academia, as it were?
Well, so I think it was COVID, really, that I kind of got to that point where I almost sort of fell out of love with care a little bit. There was so many people that I was looking after who were dying, and I just found it really, really difficult. And I think one of the saddest things when, you know, when I go to anybody's funeral was hearing things about people that you would think, oh, I wish I'd known that. Like that could have been a whole conversation, or, you know, we could have done some activities around that. So I think COVID was very much my kind of catalyst to kind of do something a bit different. And launched me into the world of academia, which is a very different place when you work in social care. Social care is full on, it's 24/7, you know, you're juggling all sorts of plates, and academia feels very relaxed and slow, and go away and think about it and come back to me in a month's time. And it's like, Oh, I don't have time for that. Let's just crack on.
Yeah, it's all got their differences, of course. But again, the importance of academia, though, is I always feel that people involved in social care and people involved in the NHS are not put on an equal footing. And if you're involved in social care, surely if you know, if, I suppose a bit facile, but you have some letters after your name, then you're standing there with someone who is, from the NHS and got letters after their name, and you're on equal footing.
Yeah, although I don't know, I've always said, and other colleagues who I work with say exactly the same, no matter what your job title in social care, actually, deep down at the end of it, you're a carer and your heart is in kind of caring for people. And that's what, that's what my love and my passion is, doing the right thing for people, making sure that their needs are met at the end of the day. But yeah, really exciting that, yeah. To be able to get a doctor title, and to have that kind of recognition within social care. I think quite often research happens, and I mean thankfully now that social care is really being embraced within research, which is absolutely fantastic, because quite often research happens and it sits on a shelf or it sits in a journal, but it never then sort of filters down to where it's really needed. And as much as perhaps CQC might encourage care providers to look at evidence-based practice, actually, if they're, don't subscribe to journals or they're not looking at, what the latest research is, they're not going to, really kind of go out there and find it. So, yeah, it's very exciting.
He's exciting. Well, tell us all about it. I mean, what is your doctor all about?
So my doctorate is around how to support people with dementia to use life storytelling, and I tend to just use the word storytelling or the term storytelling, as a way to plan their future care. So before they need to move into a care home, and really having that as a way of giving people a voice in their care, so that the person's identity is still maintained. But I think it just comes back to that, the things that you hear at funerals that you think, oh, I wish I knew that. So giving people with dementia that opportunity to say, this is important to me, this is who I am, this is, my job or my hobbies, these are the people who are important to me. These are the traditions that I like to uphold in life. So having all of that kind of collated is so important. And I think for when people with dementia transition into a care home, it's never or very rarely their choice. It's usually, somebody's had an accident, they've been in hospital, and the NHS will say that the hospitals will say actually to the family members, actually the best thing is for the person to go into a home. So again, when somebody with dementia makes that transition into a care home, they're very rarely asked, actually, what's important to you? What would you like in your care plan? What do you want care staff to know about you? So it's a really, I hope, a really kind of helpful way that people with dementia can have that voice and still retain that autonomy within a care plan, even if it gets to the point where they can't really have that say.
Do you think in terms of care plans that I'm kind of on the outside, but I've seen a few, and they do seem to have a lot of medical information in, but when it comes to the social aspects, that kind of for want of a better phrase, seems to be at the back of the book.
Yeah, I really agree with you. And it probably depends on the care provider and kind of what they place as their importance. So I think in all care, the sort of task-focused care, that's what most people see as really important. Making sure that the person has been supported to have a wash, to get dressed, to have some food, to take their medication. And actually the kind of social element is very lost because it's time consuming when you're working in a care home. And I've heard other people refer to it sometimes almost being a bit factory like that, it's a conveyor belt of people that you're just moving from one person to the next to the next. And I think what was really sad that when we were collecting some of the data, another researcher was saying that she was looking into dehydration in care homes, and she said actually a lot of care staff are not allowed to just sit down with people and have that chat, which is really sad because you can learn so much about people just from having conversations. And I think I can't remember the statistic, but I'm around sort of loneliness within care homes, but that's the reality. You know, people might be sitting in a room with 20 other people, but people are really lonely, and that's really sad in itself.
The station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
The county, and I drive the main road, searching in the sun for another overload. I hear you singing in the wire, I can hear you through the whine. And the Wichita lineman is still on the line. I know I need a small vacation, but it don't look like rain. And if it snows, that stretch down south won't ever stand the strain. And I need you more than want you. And I want you for all time. And the Wichita lineman is still on the line. And I need you more than want you, and I want you for all time. And the Wichita lineman is still on the line.
Which Is All I'm Owned by Glen Campbell, especially for my production assistant Angela, who I know is a big fan. I'm chatting to Martha Pusey about the positive impacts of storytelling. And do you think the time constraints on the staff that you've been talking about, I guess it just doesn't give you the opportunity to even catch those stories. Someone may be starting to tell you a story, but, oops, I've got to do this, I'm off. And suddenly, the moment and the information has disappeared.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think, I remember kind of back to the very sort of early days when I very first started working in care, and people's stories, that was what really hooked me into care. My first job, I will tell you now, is the best job I've ever had in care. I was a tea girl at the age of 15. My friend's parents owned a rest home and there were six ladies who lived there. And I would go on a Saturday and a Sunday and I'd get to spend time with each lady. And there was one lady, Winnie, who every single week she'd have a different photograph and a different story to share with me. And that's what made me go, oh, I love this job. You know, I want to learn more about people. So as I kind of moved through care jobs, that was almost like my priority, asking those questions and finding out that information, even if it's while you were helping somebody have a wash or get dressed. You know, tell me about, you know, your children, your family, your job. Tell me about where you grew up. Because actually, people with dementia just can tell the most amazing stories. And sometimes they might be a little bit fabricated stories, but that's okay, because in that moment to that person, you know, it's absolutely real. I had one lady, she used to tell me some great stories about the things that she used to get up to with her sister. And one day when I was talking to her daughter and I just happened to mention it, and her daughter said, no, she was an only child, she didn't have a sister. But for that lady, you know, sharing that with me was just, you know, it was so meaningful for her and she was so engaged. And so it doesn't matter that actually if the stories aren't 100% real all of the time.
Yeah, and I guess for, you know, care staff, you know, you said, you started as a teenager. One of the difficulties, I guess, is getting that conversation started, which could lead on to the story. And that's where you need a little bit of training, I guess.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think, for me as a teenager, I was probably really confident and I would talk to anybody. But, you know, imagine for some people coming into care can be quite a daunting environment. Sometimes it's noisy, it's busy, there's lots going on, you know, there's lots of people around. And if young teenagers are quite shy or they're probably more used to communicating with people over the phone, it's really difficult to strike up a conversation. So, yeah, absolutely. Training people in how to kind of have those conversations. And that's one of the kind of great bits that came out as, so we developed a resource pack that has some kind of conversation starters. So just having some of those questions can be really helpful for people just to kind of strike those initial conversations and then see what comes from it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I would, well, fortunate enough to visit a care facility in Canada with my friend Phyllis Fair last year. And when I went into the rooms, there was just a little poster on each wall and it said five things about me. I used to do. And I thought, that's so simple, but really powerful. What a really good idea.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we've designed something similar within our resource pack. So there's an Alzheimer's Society document, This Is Me, which people are encouraged to fill in, particularly if they're going into hospitals. But we actually were like, well, actually, can we do a pictorial version of that? Because quite often care staff, and if it's agency staff, they don't have time to sit and read care plans and all these additional notes. But actually, if you've got kind of, you know, a one page with sort of 8 or 10 photographs that are kind of meaningful. So we designed them off from one of the people with the group. So she was born in Balham. So for her, you know, having Balham being on her picture, she loved Italy. So, you know, having a kind of map of Italy. So it is finding those kind of easier ways to kind of get that information to care staff as well is really, really important.
I think, you know, communication is a massive part of all this. I know you're working with people living with dementia, one of which I know pretty well, Peter Middleton. And in your academic world, that is called co-production. But when I move outside the academic world and say to somebody, "Oh, it's co-production," they look at me and say, "Well, what's that then?"
What's that?
And I sort of, you know, the common sense tells me that if you're going to design something which is going to affect people, then you get those people involved in the design.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think it is because it's such an academic term that people don't often think that they are actually doing it. I mean, I've worked in lots of service where, you know, we've had stakeholder meetings, you know, I've developed services, you know, really off the back of talking to people, to families, to other providers to see actually what is needed, but would never have called it co-production. So I think that's the thing as well. It's like, in social care, do we have that, the kind of the right words, or are we using the same terminology as academics use? And quite often, no, we're not. And that's probably why. But yeah, my co-production team, I would not have been without them. They are absolutely have been so helpful, amazing, inspiring. Even, you know, I've learned things from them, other of my colleagues who work in social care who've been working on the co-production team, you know, have gone away, oh, I didn't know that. And that's so helpful to be able to know that. So it's been a real journey. And, you know, everybody's learned from each other, which has been really, really positive. But there is so much value in listening to people who have that experience, because, you know, I could make a guess at what might be right, but actually I could be completely wrong. And I think even the research kind of showed that. So I think initially we were talking about designing a training for care providers. And then as the process went along, it was like, no, that's not what we're gonna do. We need something to be able to help care providers get people to share stories, get people with dementia to kind of come to some activities to kind of capture those stories. So the research really kind of changed throughout the time. So and that shows the power of co-production as well.
Has loved you for so long, so rare to find. What people sing about in songs. When I see you smile at me, it gets me every time. Thank God you found this heart of mine. Shelter from the rain, the way we shine. I know we'll never change. We were meant to be together until the end of time. And I'll hold you with these arms of mine. Found this heart.
been playing a lot of Vince Gill's 50 Years From Home series lately, and that's This Heart of Mine. TDWRadio@gmail.com is the email. Love to hear from you. And someone who did just that was this week's guest, Martha Busey. I think it's so important to just understand the world that you're dealing with. I mean, I had outside of the Mitch, I had a case of that. When I was a school governor, we were in a small, it was a primary school, and we were interviewing a caretaker. And I said to the caretaker, "Can you get down on your knees and look around the room?" And he looked at me like, "What is this all about?" And I said, "Well, now you're looking at the world from a five-year-old's point of view. Yeah. And you know what the world looks like." So I think that's just so important, that approach.
Yeah, absolutely. Because unless you know, or unless you can understand how it is, and you can have that kind of insight and knowledge, you just have no idea how other people see it. And for people with dementia, you know, experience it as well. You know, we just can't have that without people telling us.
And I think one thing in terms of when you get a dementia diagnosis, as you know, numerous people have told me, the first list you get is the don't list. Well, don't do that and can't do this and whatever. Whereas if they're involved in, you know, if somebody's involved in your kind of research, that's got to give you a bit of confidence back as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think one of the things that I found probably quite sad was sort of how few people with dementia wanted to participate in the research. And I think we, you know, particularly within social care, but generally, you know, in dementia, we need to kind of really help people understand that their contribution is so, so valuable. And I went to six Alzheimer's Society groups, and I think part of the problem was they were so saturated with research opportunities that it was kind of like, oh, another one, here we go, right, what are you coming to try and push us into doing? And it felt a bit like, okay, like, let's just have a chat actually, rather than let me tell you about my research, because it felt like there was a bit of apathy really towards it. And I think, I don't know if we're not kind of getting out to everybody with dementia, you know, if you're just kind of going to kind of smaller groups, then I think people are going to get a bit fed up with, oh, here's another researcher, what do they want now?
Yeah, and I think it's all, you know, the themes come across probably over about the last 18 months on this show, really, of all the people I've talked to, and it's an international theme. It's not just in the UK. Is there are loads of people doing loads of absolutely brilliant things, but there's nobody coordinating it all together. And here in the UK, obviously, we don't even at the highest level have a dementia strategy. So, you know, it just seems that all the work that you're doing is brilliant, but you are going to get that kind of reaction unless there's someone there joining it all together.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, in West Sussex, we've very recently formed a new steering group to try and pull together all of the Dementia Action Alliances across the county, because we recognise there's some great work happening, you know, sort of in pockets, but again, it's that lack of joined upness. So actually, if we can have a kind of overarching, like what's happening, you know, in say Chichester or Crawley or, you know, Worthing, but then I be able to kind of feed that up as well, particularly to the MPs, because, you know, there's a real lack of understanding, I think, when it comes to MPs and what they think should happen within dementia. Not to get political, but we had an article go out about one of a project in West Sussex, and then they kind of gave the views of the parties underneath. And I kind of wanted to cry when I saw the reform answer was, well, we don't actually have a policy around dementia, but we'll just copy what we do in Scotland, which is almost we'll hope for the best. And it's like, what? Like, how can that be? Like, I find it really frustrating. But yeah,
Yeah, I think, you know, it's as people say, you have to keep hammering at the wall, then a crack will appear and then it'll fall down. But, you know, it is a lot of work in terms of doing that. When you're dealing with care providers, one of my other theories is that in care providers, obviously, we've talked about all the hygiene and health and whatever and everything you've got to get right. But some of the most undervalued people, in my opinion, are the activities coordinators.
Absolutely, absolutely. And they are so valuable because quite often they're doing work that it never gets recorded. You know, they'll be running activities, they'll be hearing things about people that, you know, there may be some notes that get put down somewhere, but it doesn't really kind of really go anywhere any sort of further than that. And I think sadly there's no kind of specific training either for activity coordinators, and that's the kind of beauty of the storytelling, because we've created some competencies around a kind of facilitator role, which very much fits with the kind of activity coordinator role. So yeah, they're a very unseen group of people who really, you know, should be developed and should be valued just as much as everybody else within care.
I think the sad thing is probably that they're the first ones to suffer in terms of cuts as well, when cuts are due to be made. And I think, you know, you make a really important point that you've got to put it on this almost academic setting for people to actually start taking it seriously. The only thing is, the other point you made is equally as important. How do you actually measure it? Because, you know, I manage six activity groups, people living with dementia in the community for the Alzheimer's Society for 2 years. And I kept being asked, you know, this, that, and the other. And I said, well, the only way we can really measure it is that people come in with a smile and they go out with a bigger one.
Yeah, it's really impossible. I know from services that I've run, sort of day services, we've kind of looked at how do we measure that kind of success from groups, and it's really difficult, really, really difficult, because I think when we've done things like cognitive stimulation therapy, you know, we've kind of tried to kind of, how are you feeling at the moment? You know, how are you feeling at the start? How do you feel at the end? What do you feel that has helped you or improved for you? But that can sometimes be really difficult. You know, if you're running a sort of 10, 12 week, you know, cognitive stimulation therapy groups, people can't remember back to week one and how they were feeling in week one. They just really remember how they're feeling kind of today in that moment. And I think you're so right. If they go home with a big smile on their face, that's an absolute win.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we're going back to what we were talking about earlier in the conversation. People also, even if you do start giving them forms or whatever, you know, eyes roll, not another one to fill in. And you just don't get that approach. So I suppose that there's a whole thing around this, really, isn't it? The whole social aspects and how you get that. Treated in, I don't know if serious is the right word, but in an appropriate manner. Because, you know, a health thing's fairly easy to treat in an appropriate manner. Here's a disease, this is how we can treat it or can't, case closed. Whereas with all the social aspects, it is so indeterminate and difficult to find.
Absolutely, and I think there's a lot comes down to commissioning, and that can be so different from area to area, depending on who's got funding, who's not got funding. You know, even, you know, like you were saying about there's no dementia strategy. You know, if there's something really key and specific in the dementia strategy around, you know, making sure people have good activity provision, people would be doing it. I think similarly with CQC, there's a little bit around well-being, but not enough to really make care homes go, right, we're going to really focus on the social aspect and why that's really important for people. And, you know, thinking about kind of commissioning within West Sussex, it's something that's always on the agenda, but something that's like, it's nice, but yeah, we've still got no money for it.
Do you think, you know, it would improve if, you know, you're already involving people living with dementia in decision making in what you're doing in your doctorate research? And you know, if people living with dementia were involved in those council meetings and MB meetings and you know, all those kind of things, I mean, you know, should we not be doing that? I've been at Dementia Action Alliances where I've asked the question, isn't someone missing? And everybody looked at me and I said, well, there's nobody here living with dementia, so how can we actually know we're doing the right thing?
Absolutely. And, going back to our West Sussex steering group, it's very much led by people with dementia. We've got three people with dementia and a family representative each. And the meeting is really, we always come back to them. You tell us, we can come up and say, we think you would like this service, but actually, you tell us what you think you really want. And the steering group's been running for probably about 3 or 4 months now. And one of the real kind of key things that people with dementia and their family keep telling us is that we want to be able to have better education around dementia. So for people with dementia, it's that peer-to-peer support and finding value in that. For carers, it's a lot of the kind of knowledge that things that they need to know, maybe not right now, but you will need to know at some point. And I don't know kind of where you are, sort of how much the Alzheimer's Society offers anymore, but particularly in West Sussex, lots of their kind of courses have been cut back. So they used to run what was called the CRISP course. Carers really valued that, and they keep saying, we want something that's similar to that. And then they're saying that actually we want to make sure that the care professionals are really properly trained as well. I'm sure you'll have seen the email that was circulated from the Alzheimer's Society that baristas are better trained in dementia care than care home staff, which is terrifying, but so true. It is so true. But yeah, so our West Sussex networking group is very much person-led, and we want to know what people with dementia want. So to us, that's really, really important.
Yeah, I think it's it's absolutely vital, and I think there's so many areas as well that there are so many obvious areas when you start to think of it, because a lot of people will think, well, what's that got to do with me, or what's that got to do with whatever? And I talk to people in Canada, and they've been looking at things like transport. Well, yeah, well, this is really important here, because if someone's taking your driving license away and you still want to get about, then transport companies are vital.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think that kind of goes across the board, even in this country, that there's very few services that offer transport. People have become very reliant on taxis or buses. And when you've got dementia, that trying to navigate can be really, really difficult. If you kind of lose your sense of orientation and things like that, transport is, yeah, it's a massive, massive issue for people.
And it really is a, it's still unfortunately a postcode lottery in terms of support and what we've been discussing. It's almost an individual lottery at times in terms of the person you're talking to that's taking care of your loved one and how much they know, which particularly with general practitioners, because they do an unbelievable job. They've got an unbelievable amount of stuff to know. But knowledge of dementia, as a lot have admitted to me, is, well, we don't get much training on that, really.
Yeah, and actually, I've been paid to work on a couple of other studies, and one of those was looking at people with dementia with long-term health conditions and how well they're supported to manage those by healthcare professionals. And everybody was saying, my GP's lovely, but the nurses are lovely, but and there just seemed to be that kind of real lack of understanding around dementia and how. Telling somebody something, that's great, but by the time the person's got home, they're probably not going to remember what the doctor or the nurse or whoever had said to them. So it's helping healthcare professionals to understand that actually there's other ways, make sure things are written down or you've got, kind of information that you can give to somebody to take away with them rather than just expect someone's going to remember it.
I
And I think
think the sorry, yeah, the interesting thing is in that area that we have got it right in certain other diseases. Because if someone has a cancer diagnosis, there's a pathway, there's loads of information, there's Macmillan, there's various people. So it still amazes me that we can't actually look at that and say, well, let's just, use the best parts of that for dementia.
Yeah, and I think that just comes back to there's no dementia strategy, and there's no kind of ideal, this is how it should work for people with dementia. You know, in my career, the amount of family members that I've spoken to who've just said, you know, we were given a diagnosis of dementia, and then we feel like we just fell off a cliff, and we're just left to get on and navigate everything, you know, for ourselves. And when you understand the care system, it still can be difficult, but you know, you can still get the right things in place. But when you've got no idea about what you might need or who you should go to, it must just feel like you have been left in an absolute abyss. And I think that's why, you know, the importance of having so many great sort of charities and organizations out there who do help people and with dementia and their families. But again, they struggle to find money and funding, and it just becomes a bit of a kind of vicious circle that then services get cut, and then that's not available for people. So it's, yeah, it feels very frustrating.
The station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
It is frustrating, although, you know, I've been doing this show for 7 years. And things I have definitely moved on, I've got to say, from when I started. I suppose, you know, the idea behind the show really was just to get people talking. And also all those people like yourself who are doing great research, charities that are doing great jobs or whatever, just give people a voice so people out there know what's going on. Because, you know, you can put a Google search in there and you could be there from now until the next millennium with stuff firing at you. Whereas somehow you need to kind of condense all that down and pick the information you need.
Absolutely, absolutely. And yeah, you could just be looking for an eternity, like you say.
And it's sort of, you know, it's a whole difficult thing for researchers. And also people living with dementia, I mean, still the public view is if someone gets a dementia diagnosis, then suddenly they've become a completely different person. I don't know how to talk to them. And also they won't be able to teach me anything. Pete Middleton has told me more about AI than I would ever have learned from Google. And so other friends living with dementia have all told me great stuff. But when I actually say that to people, some people say, and they're living with dementia. I say, well, yeah.
And I think that's again why, you know, coming back to people with dementia contributing to research, there is so much value. You know, Pete was our IT guy. You know, he set us up a Padlet so that we could communicate and chat and share ideas between meetings. You know, he was the one who was there, right, you need to think about this, we've got to get this sorted. But then there are other members of the group who contributed other things. So, you know, another member who he fantastic with anything kind of ethics related to research. He's taken part in lots of other dementia research, and so you just have to ask him and he would know it. And he was really interested in funding and getting funding. So it was just finding people's passions almost, isn't it? And kind of hooking into those within research and kind of getting people to kind of contribute and share. And again, that forms, really great co-production, because it's not me as the researcher saying, right, we've got to get X, Y, Z done. It's somebody with dementia saying, right, here's how to do the IT, here's how to get the ethics sorted. Care professionals bringing in their ideas as well. So it becomes proper co-production.
Okay, it's a team approach. That's really what it requires. And also, I finished with a quote that you put up on your LinkedIn page. Says one of your favorite quotes, and I thought it now becomes one of my favorites, which is, "There is always me in the middle of dementia."
And I'm sure, so Chris Maddox, who's on my team, I'm sure she won't mind being credited with saying that she would say it in most meetings, and it very much became my kind of reminder. And particularly when it comes to, storytelling, that actually it's about the person and their story, and it's about their life, and regardless of what happens with their dementia, it is about them. And even when you look at the word dementia, when it's got me in the middle, that absolutely, it's a cracking quote from Chris, absolutely amazing.
Yeah, I think Chris got it absolutely spot on. Well, Martha, it's been a real joy. Thank you so much for being my guest. Good luck with the doctorate and all of that. And hopefully, we can get you back on the show and continue to talk about what is a really important subject.
Fantastic, Pete. Thanks for having me. It's been a real pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks to Martha, and I wish her every success with her studies for her doctorate. That's all for this week. Thanks to Angela, my production assistant. Next week, with the World Cup well underway, we continue our series on dementia and football, when I meet Cluain Phillips, who's been studying how the design of footballs can reduce the impact of heading. So until then, thanks for your company, and take care now.